Welcome to the podcast where no topic is too personal, no nail polish is too sparkly, and no microphone is too noisy. This is the Because Show.
So true. I like that one. I have to say, on our podcast with Aaron, he had an excellent tagline for us, although he was using it to describe Orange is the New Black.
What?
It was, come for the boobs, stay for the characters.
Aww. Yep.
He wasn't talking about us.
Oh, okay.
But I totally stole it. I'm like, we're going to use that.
Totally ripping that off.
Yeah.
And here we are.
I like it. Mm-hmm. So, Amy and Susan, how has your week been going?
Okay. Pretty good.
Pretty okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Well, let's jump right into matters at hand. We've got a lot to talk about this evening.
Okay.
And the first and foremost on my mind is, isn't it true that sometimes when you say something, it just like the ramifications of, it's like a butterfly across the ocean, the ripples go across the
butterfly
the
effect there
when you say something like,
or chaos theory or something.
I implemented a bit of chaos theory last week when I said that Starbucks salted caramel cake pops are the best thing in the world.
Uh-huh. And their stock went up?
They discontinued them.
Oh, motherfucker.
Oh, no.
God damn it, Starbucks. You piece of shit.
What did you do to get that karma? Did you do something terrible to somebody?
Well, I don't know. They're just, for the last, let's say, week and a half, every Starbucks I go into, and I go into one or two a day. Mm. I'm like, do you have the salted caramel cake pops? And they're just like, no. Seemingly like, no, we're out of them for today.
Right.
And so finally, I go into a Starbucks, and I'm like, please tell tell me, boulangerie.
Crabby lady.
Where can I find the salted caramel cake pops? And they're like, oh, we don't make those anymore. And I was like, you're kidding me.
And this lady's like, Bob, we got another one.
And I was like, I'm so bummed. I can't believe that. And they gave me a free cookie.
Really? Because you were so sad?
Oh, I'm totally using that tomorrow.
Wait, did you have like an actual fit, or was it just because someone felt bad for you?
No.
Did you make a scene?
Did you start to tear up? Was your lower lip quivering?
Was there a video of you on YouTube, like losing your shit?
No, I mean, I wasn't mad. I was sad.
Oh, right.
I was like, I can't believe it. That's been my favorite thing all summer, and it's gone. And they're like, well, it may come back at Christmas time, but we can't make any promises.
Christmas?
I was like, what?
All right. This is a call to you, listeners. Get out your pens and stationery. And
grassroots campaign.
Grassroots campaign.
Write
salted
the letters.
Caramel cake pops for Geraldine.
Or email. You can send probably emails to Starbucks.
So, I prefer the image of the pen and the stationery box coming
too.
Out.
I am hoping. I'm not going to go. I'm just going to move on. I'm going to find a new favorite treat. You know, I've got
good attitude.
Just
good.
Roll with it.
It's good to be adaptable.
So that was something major that happened to me. How about you guys? What's going on?
Let's see. I hosted a sleepover with Susan's two sons. That was fun.
Oh, yeah. Charlie. Not even three yet.
His very first sleepover.
His first sleepover.
He was extremely cute.
Yep. And well, it was his older brother, who's six, and him. So, yeah, it was cute.
It was extremely cute.
Mm-hmm.
And it went well. I spent most of Sunday recovering, I would say.
We did the Orange is the New Black podcast
with
Aaron.
We did it with Aaron. It was really fun. Yeah. You all should listen to it. I think it's going to be posted at some point in the extremely near future.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you guys, we've talked about OkCupid a lot in the past months.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Amy and I are single women on the loose, kind of.
Kind of on the semi-loose. We're like in a run, like a dog run, but like we're single women.
Right.
Well, it turns out I came across a study about OkCupid, about what really is going on online behind the scenes.
Ooh, what's really going on?
Real story.
Well, it turns out they did a study. Who is they? They is, I don't know, some people. they put up fake profiles to see which kinds of people would attract more responses. And of people who were really, truly available, like dating, married and in an open relationship, or married and wanted to cheat and be sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, what do you think, judging from what you know of online dating, who do you think got the most responses?
Well, I actually read this article, so I'm not going to answer that. But you can.
I'm going to say, logically speaking, I would say the single looking for, you know, other singles.
Okay. Well, of the, I think less, it's less women. I mean, big surprise, surprise. It's less women looking for married men to cheat with. It's a lot of men looking for married women to cheat with.
I believe it.
And
really?
Yeah.
Because it's guaranteed no strings.
Right.
And I think somehow a married woman looking for action on the side is probably pretty hot for some certain kind of guys.
And so of the fake profiles, they called this group the brazen cheats, people who were the profiles that were married people saying they will cheat. 82% of them received messages from women chastising them, like, you should you should know better. Wow. How dare you? Your poor wife.
Wait, the men? Oh, the men got those messages.
Yeah, the men. And for in the reverse, only 10% of the fake women profiles received chastising emails from the men.
And then they were like, are you busy later?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that led the results of the study were to find that OkCupid is mostly, it's people looking for sex.
Oh, really?
You know, like no strings attached, like easy.
Do you find that, though, in your personal experience with the stuff that you read and any guy that you might meet?
Well, of messages, I would say like 75% of the messages I'm receiving are probably people just looking for sex.
Because I found when I was on it that a lot of the, not the messages, but a lot of the profiles I read of the men, a lot of them were like, I want to love you. I want a girlfriend. I want to be in love.
Oh,
you know,
man.
Like a lot of guys were like that, surprisingly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's why it's interesting to read, and that's why it's fun to go to browse through the listings, because it's such sort of a wide spectrum from anyone, people who seem desperate for love to desperate for sex and anywhere in between.
True.
So still, I'm finding it endlessly fascinating. So what else is going on in the world? I have more interesting advice and more useful information about sex and the people of the world. Do you guys know what swinging is?
Yes, we know what swinging is.
Okay, do you know what the swinging signals are?
No. Are those like gang signs?
Yeah.
Or like when the gay guys had to wear those those like handkerchiefs in their pockets to say if they were top or bottom or like to be peed on? What?
Well,
I'm just talking. Go ahead.
Through my sources, I have found out two ways to signify that you're a swinger. One is wearing a black ring on any finger on your right hand.
Okay.
Oh, shit, you guys.
Oh.
That's silver and black. Does it have to be just all black?
Yeah, a black ring.
Oh, all black.
Like black metal.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm safe.
And the other one is to have in your grocery cart, to have an upside down pineapple.
That's made it. You made that up.
That is awesome. That's the most awesome thing I've ever heard. Oh, where did you see that?
I did not make it up.
StuffThat'sNotTrue.com?
No.
I'm going to try that. Every fucking time I go grocery shopping, I'm totally putting an upside down pineapple. First stop, produce, pineapple, upside down. Wait for it.
It's not like the upside down flag where it's a cry of distress. It's like upside down pineapple, cry for swinging.
I heard that.
How does that? I would think like a bunch of bananas next to a pack of donuts.
Donuts, right? Exactly. Some sausages.
Yeah, some more
Cheerios.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I don't know where that signifier came from, but I heard it from a reputable source, the Boris and Doris podcast.
They know their stuff.
Swinging. Yeah, they recently put out, they don't put out many episodes, maybe one or two a year. So I listened to the last one and I got some good info.
I'm going to Google upside down pineapple. Will you just Google upside down pineapple right now?
I want you to go to upsidedownpineapple.com.
Oh, yeah, me too.
You know what?
What?
I am putting on a musical.
What?
With kids.
Oh, at school?
At school.
That's so cute.
Myself and another teacher were organizing a musical. It's called Go West with an exclamation point at the end.
That's adorable.
And it's a whole like kit that you buy. You get a.
We close our eyes at night.
That's the band. Right.
So we're doing it. We're doing
it.
Auditions are
adorable.
September 9th.
Oh, I can't wait. I wonder what part I'm going to get. That's really,
really
cute.
Yeah, it's taken off a big bite, and hopefully I can chew it.
I'm sure you can.
And hopefully the audience can swallow it.
I'm sure they can, too. That's very exciting.
So, yeah, it's very exciting. So
will you be the director?
I will be the director.
And what is the other teacher going to be?
And the choreographer.
What will the other teacher be?
The other teacher is going to be basically, like, crowd control and also, like, help with the blocking.
Okay. Yeah. That's going to be really cute.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a big a big bite to take on. Okay.
So one of the things we had questioned from our listeners, one of the questions we got from our listeners is, what would you do differently if you were back in your
20s? Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
We received an email from a young woman. I'm going to see if I can pull it up. Mm-hmm. But basically the gist of it was, she had just broken up with her boyfriend. She was going through the ups and downs, the Sturm und Drang of the 20s. Mm-hmm. And she said, we always sound so interesting.
Thank you.
And fabulous and beautiful.
Of course.
So what, looking back many years, what would we do differently? I gave this some thought. Mm-hmm. As we all know, I was a very arduous, hardworking graduate student through a lot of my 20s. I was had my nose to the grindstone. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I don't think I would have done that much differently, but I would have liked to try heroin.
I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know what
that was not what I expected.
That was definitely leading us down one path,
and then whoop, dropping you off
exactly,
the cliff.
Exactly. I don't think that's my thing.
Yeah, I had so many friends that tried heroin that I knew that I did not want to try it. Yeah,
I think I would have worked harder. Unlike Geraldine, I don't think I really understood how important that was, especially because I could
working hard.
Yeah, I worked, but I was just like, nah. Like, I had the same attitude as I did in school. Like, I mm-hmm. could kind of try halfway and do a perfectly good job, fine, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe if I really had applied myself, I could have gotten further faster.
Well, you guys both went to college like right out of high school, so you were doing like college, graduate school, all
I didn't
that
go to graduate
stuff.
School, but yeah. And I think I would have, I mean, easy for me to say, right? I think I would have cared less about what people thought about me, but in the context of like dating, probably in the context of dating, because I was always concerned, like, oh, if I go out with this guy, can I go out with this other guy? Like, just feeling very obligated to these guys I dated. And I think I probably could have been a little more relaxed about that and maybe dated more guys. I had some more, because once I started having a boyfriend, like, I always had a boyfriend, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think if I had like maybe dated around a little bit, that would have been fun too.
Hmm. So I'm pulling up our message from Taylor. Mm-hmm. She says she's in her mid-20s and for the first time in her adult life, she's single. So yay, that's a great thing. That's a great time. She says it's a bit scary and a bit overwhelming, but also exciting. And she wants to make the most of it. If we had gone back to our 20s, what do we wish we had known that we know now about dating or guys or your career or life in general? You are also interesting to listen to, and I love hearing your stories. Thank you, Taylor. Thanks, Taylor.
You forgot the beautiful and fabulous part. We just inferred it.
It sounds like you were all quite adventurous in your 20s. I was not. But I mean, heck, I drove across the country when I was 19 to move to California when I didn't know anyone. I did not know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to make it on my own until I got accepted to UCLA. I mean, that's that's not adventurous, like sexy glamorous.
Oh, sure it is.
But
it's
pretty amazing.
It was an adventure on my own. Yeah, I had my parents gave me a station wagon, $1,000, and they were like, see you later, kid.
Wow, at
19.
In
1991.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think. Because I remember, I was like 20 by the time I was already in California when I turned 20. So yeah, it was fun and exciting, and it took me a long time to get my feet on the ground and meet people and get. It wasn't until I went to school at UCLA like a year later. I had moved to LA, but I needed to be a California resident, so I needed to live here for a year.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do for a year? Where'd you live? How'd you
remember
find a place
Dolphin
to live?
Shorts guy?
Dolphin shorts guy.
When I drove into town, I got the first apartment that I applied, you know, like you have to fill out an application in kind of a crappy part of town. But because I was new to LA, I didn't know any, you know,
where was it?
It was on Gower and like near Sunset and Vine.
Oh, okay.
And there were palm trees. So it seemed like California.
Yeah.
And so I moved in, and so during the time for the next year while I was waiting to get, I mean, I was accepted into graduate school, but I needed to become a California resident. So I was like sending out resumes. I was working on my screenplay, Soul Circus, which I have to pull out. I still have it.
Yeah.
And so I joined a writing group that met every week so I could have people to interact with. I was working phone sex.
I was going to say, what did you do for the job? But that was phone sex time.
That was my job. So I could be working on my screenplay.
Well, hold on a second. Now, were you like, I need a job. How about phone sex? Nice and flexible. Or were you like, I don't know what to do. I applied for a bunch of jobs. I need money now. Phone sex.
Well, no, I think I did another thing. I did telemarketing by selling nail polish.
Okay.
That was, you know, mm-hmm. that's what was what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got hired as a production assistant on a movie called The Hidden Part 2,
mm-hmm.
which was I had a couple gigs of being an assistant to producers in Hollywood, mm-hmm. which was horrible. This was unpaid too.
Yeah, they're terrible mm-hmm. jobs.
Yeah, so this was like, can you meet us here? We're having a meeting at 8:00. Can you be here at 7 to go pick up orange juice for our meeting? And
you're like, yes.
And use your own money.
Oh, Jesus. And they're hard to get. How did you get the job? Not knowing anybody, because they're hard to get.
I just wrote letters and letters and letters.
Wow.
It was all letters.
Yeah.
I would go to the library, get the Hollywood Reporter, look through what productions were coming up, and mm-hmm. I wrote a shitload of letters.
That's how, like, was it Sarah Silverman got her start? Was doing that
really?
Kind of stuff?
Writing letters?
I think I was
really into it. I mean, it was so fun. So I was doing a lot of like kind of jumping around, doing this, doing that, mm-hmm. and then the phone sex was like, you know, you could do it from 6 to 9, a 3-hour shift. Yeah. So I could go do whatever I needed to do during the day, and then come home, talk on the phone for 3 hours, and I don't know. I think I got paid like a total month's worth of work would pay me like $800.
Not bad. And that's to live on, but
and that
bad.
Was enough for me as a
back then
a 20-year-old in 1990.
Yeah. Really, you could pay your rent
totally.
Was that in LA?
Yeah, my rent was like say $350.
Wow.
And then all the rest of the money, all I would need to buy was cigarettes and
heroin. Well, because when I lived here for a year, I think in 93-94, my rent was $650. I just lived in a studio.
Well, you had a roommate, right, Geraldine? Oh, you didn't have a roommate. Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, I mean, later on, like through my time, I've had roommates, but when I first moved, I lived by myself.
Yeah.
Wow. So,
well, yeah, when I had a little studio apartment, it was like $600 a month, and that was just in 2000.
Wow.
So how about you guys? What were you doing when you were trying to get established in your freshly out of college or freshly out of high school? Trying to get your feet on the ground.
Well,
Susan,
I did a nanny thing.
You went and became a nanny.
Yep, and then a stripper. After that, so mm-hmm.
So when did it dawn on you that you were like, I need to go get a real job, like my career needs to begin at some point?
That was,
I can't do this forever.
Yeah, after, well, I quit and I worked at an art gallery in New York, the Vorpal Art Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and I really liked that a lot. And then I decided I wanted to move out of New York because my two best friends were heroin addicts, and I was really sick of not seeing mountains and trees. And yeah, I was just like, you know, I'm gonna move back to Seattle. And I was tired of, like, you know, there's a drug dealer on the stoop every morning and you get cat calls all day long and you're like, okay, I'm ready for a change.
Yeah,
so I went to live in Seattle and met Dominique, the hacker paranoid guy with the guns.
Right, I remember him.
Lived with him for a while and kind of figured out, like, okay, I'm tired of working at a bar. I would like to do something. And he's like, well, why don't you take classes, you know, during the day at the community college, mm-hmm. and then you could go to work at night. I'm like, that's a great idea.
Yeah, thank you, Dominique.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was at community college where I was like, I want to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And then it all went uphill from there.
Exactly. Let's see, for me, when I graduated college, my parents actually had moved to Boston really briefly. So I moved back there. I moved back in with them and I waited tables. I waited tables on and off throughout my working career. And then I started, when I moved back to Chicago, still lived with my parents. I lived in the coach house. They had a little like a Fonzie above the garage. So I lived there and then I started answering phones. So I was a receptionist because it was way easier than waiting tables.
Mm-hmm.
So I did receptionist and then I got a job. Because I wanted to be, I always was a writer. It's kind of what I wanted to do all the time. And then my very first writing job, I think I got through my dad, a friend of his, was direct mail,
mm-hmm.
which was really interesting. I'm like, I don't know. Some of you probably don't even know what that is. But, you know, you used to get these letters in the mail that said, it's just like your spam and your email. But mm-hmm. they were just in the mail. Like, hey, Geraldine, it's summertime. Don't you want a credit card? You know, or whatever. So, mm-hmm. and like brochures and like this whole thing. And I was actually just talking about direct mail at work, and I said, it was in context, but I said the rule of direct mail was that if you put it in a PS, everybody would read it. You always had to put the most important information in the PS.
Oh, that's true.
Some people
right.
like would skip the whole letter, but they'd read the PS.
Read the PS, yep.
So,
I do that.
I do that too. You're always like, oh, PS, ooh, something juicy. So I did that, and then I got another job. I was taking a writing class, a screenwriting class. I met a woman in there. There was like a big convention, like a writing convention that we went to represent the screenwriting group. And when I was there, I just totally whored myself out for jobs. And I met a woman who's still a really good friend. and she gave me a job at GE doing writing for them. And it was like right at the perfect time of like the internet boom.
Oh,
you know, it was like the 90s. I guess that was like the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people my age were just like, it was like the Wild West. Like, we don't know what it is. We'll just make it up as we go along. And that was me as far as like content, you know, writing for the internet. So now it's funny because when people ask me, they're like, how did you learn to do it? Did you go to school? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. You know, it can't be that different than just regular reading, which actually turns out it is. But yeah, so I never really thought of it. It took me a long time to think of myself as like lucky being in the right place at the right time to have that skill. And now I'm realizing like, oh, you know what? That was actually pretty fortuitous. So, and here I am.
That's great. Well, so I guess it can be a mixture of like self-determination, mm-hmm. luck, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, right place, right time.
Yeah, and also knowing where you want to go and mm-hmm. just making it happen. And also being very, I think you have to be very patient mm-hmm. between, I mean, unless, I don't know, some people hit it big and get going to where they want to be right away in their 20s. But usually it takes a while, like years to build and make contacts and work and get better jobs and make lateral moves and then get a better job and then get fired or get downsized and then you get a better job
or change your mind about what you want to do.
But
what I have a question. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say that like your 20s are, you're kind of almost a, not a total product of your 20s, but mm-hmm. your 20s are kind of for like discovering yourself.
Very true.
Really.
Yeah, and they're hard.
They're hard.
Like we remember just being like, oh, I was so young and cute and free, but like it's hard to be in your 20s.
It is hard. It's a lot of work.
But it's a lot of work to figure out who you are.
Yeah,
I'm finding that my 20s were much, much harder. I mean, everything was so much harder now, mm-hmm. so much harder then than it is now because I had no money. Mm-hmm. I was not sure my career would go. I didn't know that I would be able to do what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Like I was waiting to get my foot in the door. That mm-hmm. that was really frustrating and hard. Everything seemed so, like you want so much and it seems so far away.
Yeah.
At least for me, like you want to get married. You want to have a house. You want to have a great job. You want to have, I mean, not that I have all these things now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in the middle of a divorce, mm-hmm. but there was so many, so much wanting.
Yeah, and it's like the big question mark.
And not knowing how, what I needed to do to get there. I mean, looking back, I do wish I had a bit of, I wish I had a mentor. I always thought that.
I wish I had a mentor. How come some people have mentors? I want one.
I was a little bit jealous of anybody who ever mentioned they had a mentor because I was like, what?
I know. I'm like, I want someone to take me under their wing and like help me out.
Mm. Yeah, I know. That would have been really nice. And I had always told myself that if I was ever in a position to be a mentor, mm-hmm. I would. It hasn't come up yet, but I'm leaving that door open.
Me too.
What kind of mentor are you guys talking about? You're talking about like someone that guides you or someone that just like gives you advice or someone that you look up to and want to be?
No, I mean, for me, in a like more in a career sense, a professional capacity where they mm-hmm. are taking you under in animation, mm-hmm. like say mm-hmm. there would be somebody who is an animator and you would be their assistant and they would be teaching you a bit of the tricks of the trade and they would also be, I mean, in an ideal world, like giving you contacts and passing your
looking
name
at
on
your work and giving
and,
you
you should talk to this person. Oh, okay. This studio would be great for you.
Yeah, God, I wish I had that. That'd
and
be great.
To have a mentor to guide you, mm-hmm. I think is one of the best. I mean, if you get that, just you know,
use
appreciate it.
Yeah.
So what else do we have for Taylor?
I think this will apply to Taylor as well, but someone asked me on Facebook, they sent a big email to a lot of people, said that they had a niece who was just turning 16 or maybe graduate. I think she's graduating high school. And they said, okay, so what kind of advice do you have for her? If you had gotten some advice at that age, what do you wish it would be? So I think that would be helpful, even in your mid-20s. That's kind of helpful. So I thought we could talk about that with Taylor too. Yeah, I have we're talking about
20s?
Advice. Like, what advice would you give to someone in there?
Smoke in your 20s, but stop in your 30s.
Stop when you're 30.
Stop when you're 30.
It's hard, though. Once you start, it's hard to stop.
Yeah. But if you're going to smoke,
mm-hmm.
if you really want to smoke, time. don't smoke more than half a pack a day. Or just do it when you go out partying.
Yeah.
That's
don't,
hard.
But
that's,
don't start.
That's hard
don't,
for people.
Don't start. It's better to not start. Because my friends now who are still smokers, kind of gross.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross by now.
Yeah. It's gross and it takes forever to quit.
Yeah.
But I would say all the just sort of smart things. But it's also, you know, one thing I do wish I had a chance to do that I never did is right after college, a lot of my friends went to Europe. They went backpacking through Prague. Mm-hmm. Everybody mm-hmm. did that.
My sister did that.
And I could have done that if I wanted to, but I wanted to get ahead on my career, so I chose not to. Yeah. And so now it is, now I'm 42 and I have not been to Europe. And
well,
I think
so you went to London.
Well, I don't count London.
Why? Because it's not Germany?
London was your very first time going to Europe?
Well, I had been to London before.
Okay.
Oh.
I have not been to the continental.
Okay. You haven't been to any other country in Europe?
No.
Wow.
I have not.
Okay.
So I'm saying there was a small window
of
a time right after college when I didn't have that many obligations. I didn't have that much money, but I probably could. I should have gone then because once I started, you know, starting to live my life, the chance never came up.
Right. It's true. It does get harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started working and then you get married. And so it was only maybe a couple summers that I could have been like, okay, see ya.
And you're never going to feel like you've got the money. So you might as well go now.
Right.
It's always super. Oh, you're always like, oh my God, we don't have the money. So now if you can scrape anything together,
you just need to get your plane. But also when you're 21 or 22, all you need to do is get yourself over there and then you can just wing it.
In a hostel.
As Susan knows.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, because when you're older, you don't want to stay in a youth hostel. We talked about that.
Right, right.
So I maybe would have taken someone up on the offer to go backpacking in Europe.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
I have some advice.
I wish I would have. Well, I guess I did go to Europe I think I was like 29 or 30. Yeah. But I wish I would have gone earlier with like a group rather than just by myself.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a good truckload of advice for you, Taylor.
Okay.
First, some of the best little pieces of wisdom I've read, and it was recently, but it totally stuck with me, was how you do anything is how you do everything. And that's a really good one, I think, because you just pay attention to how people do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to give you a big clue about, like, if you're dating a guy, we'll put it in that framework.
Mm-hmm.
If you're dating a dude and he is like, now I can't think of an example. Like, it's hard for him to make a decision. Like, he's super indecisive about small things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care what we do. You decide. We could do this. Yeah. We could do that. Blah blah blah.
Anything
like,
you want. What do you want?
What do you want to do? Yeah. Like, he is going to be like that with
everything.
As far as like jobs go, maybe
Do you want to get married? I don't know.
Right.
It's up to you.
Right.
You
might just leave it.
You're like, oh fuck that.
Like, if he breaks up with you, probably won't be able to do that very well. You know, just stuff like that. So I think that's a good one. Just pay attention. Or if someone has a temper, you know, and if you go out with them to a restaurant and they get really mad at the waiter, you know, that's like a very
red flag.
Yeah. The other piece of advice is actually really similar, which is someone just told this to me the other day. Might have been my mom, which is quoting an author like, when someone shows you who they are, believe them, which is kind of a similar thing.
Like, oh, I'm so messy. Watch out for me. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, okay. You're very messy.
Or getting mad at the waiter once again. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, even if it's not directed at you, like, pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And then the third thing, these are two important life lessons. I don't know if I've talked about this here before, but I want to pass this on to Benji. Like, very important things for life.
Yeah.
The first one is, when you move into a new place, the very first thing you should do is make your bed. Like, put the sheets and pillows and everything, like, even in a separate thing, just make the bed. Because then at the end of the day, when you're totally overwhelmed and there's boxes everywhere and you're exhausted, you can fall into a nicely made bed and you feel at home in your new spot and it's less freaky. Because the first night in a new place is just weird.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't want to be sleeping on the floor.
You don't want to be sleeping on the bare mattress with just a blanket. You'll be all sad. Okay, so make your bed. Second one is when people come to visit you from out of town, the first night that they're there, make them a homemade dinner. This other piece of advice, because when people travel all day, they don't want to go out to a loud, they're tired. They don't want to go out to a loud restaurant. They don't want to get back in a car. They just want to like sit in a nice, quiet place. You can give them a nice dinner and then they can go to bed because they're tired.
Right.
So also learn how to make nice dinner.
Yeah.
Learn how to make one acceptable good salad, main course, simple dessert, something really simple that you can serve to your guests after they're tired from traveling all day and they'll be so happy.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So there you go. That's all my advice, Taylor.
And here's my advice.
Yes.
Live your 20s so that you can tell some really good stories when you're 80.
Or 40.
Or 40.
Yes, exactly. I think that's good, too.
Yeah, that's how I, like, when in my 20s, I was consciously aware of that.
Oh,
like,
good.
Damn, I'm going to have some good
you
stories.
You are, and you do. And pay attention to your choices, because they may have some long-ranging effects.
Yes.
So.
Condom.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously. Okay, we're done, Geraldine. Go ahead.
Well, we got a voicemail. Let's take a listen.
Hey, the Cuds Show ladies. This is Julie from Chicago, and I am calling because I was so excited to hear that some of you, and I think also Aaron, are doing a podcast for Orange is the New Black. It is my favorite new show, and I just think it's fantastic. My husband and I, after we put our baby's down for the night, we curl up on the couch and we say, should we watch our show? Yeah, let's watch our show. It's just great. It kind of reminds me of Lost, which I was obsessed with when it was on, in the way that the show, there's so many different characters that we're meeting, and you initially have a lot of judgments on them just based on the fact that they're in a prison. But then with every episode, you get to see the backstory of the character. And I just really love that format. I especially love – oh, and I should mention I'm only halfway through the season right now. And we're kind of taking our time watching them because I don't want them to be over too fast. But the two characters that I just love are Red, who is the one who runs the kitchen. I just think her background is so interesting. And it's so really great to see where she started and then where she's gone throughout her process, her time before prison, and then her status in the prison. And then I also love Crazy Eyes. I just think the actress who plays that role is just hilarious. And I just adore that character. Really messed up, but so funny. And also really scary. And I think Jason Biggs is also doing a really great job. I've never really seen him in a meaty role, I think. You know, I remember him from American Pie, and that was pretty fluffy, to say the least. So it's really great to see him in a role where he can really, you know, show more of what he can do. And the lead actress, I can't remember her name, but I think it's really great that she seems to be coming into her own while she's in prison. So those are my initial thoughts on the show, and I cannot wait to hear the podcast. And thank you guys for doing this. Check you later. Bye.
Thank you, Julie. That was that. We had a good time doing the podcast, and yep. It was
and
nice to.
Don't
have you.
Listen to it until you've finished watching.
Oh yeah, it's full of spoilers.
So spoily,
like chock full of spoilers.
Yeah.
So if you haven't finished watching the show, don't listen to it yet.
So moving on, we put out a call to our listeners some time ago that we wanted updates on people.
Yes, we did.
And we are still waiting to hear from a lot of people.
Darn.
We've got I know a few specific people in my mind who I definitely want to hear
too.
What happened. I hope they're still listening.
Me too. I think she knows
Winifred.
Who she is.
Yeah.
I keep mentioning this person's the very first email I ever got.
Yeah, yeah.
Private message, and I want to know what happened
with
you.
And maybe some of the men out there.
Yeah, the guy with the 2 a.m. yeah. letter about the marriage.
One thing that we did get an update about is that it's not really an update.
Okay.
It's more advice for another listener. Someone had asked how to make side money, how to get a little bit of a pocket money stuff going.
Phone
and
sex.
One of our listeners, Kate from Hawaii, she's updated us that her Sunshower Coffee Farm is it's up and coming. She's got it going on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways I think that she makes money on the side is growing wheatgrass juice. She grows wheatgrass, which I guess probably in Hawaii grows like crazy, and then it can be pressed and sold as wheatgrass juice, which is like, you know, when you go into Whole Foods, you one little, like 1 ounce costs $2. Mm. So imagine like if you're growing it, that it could be a lucrative.
Kate is just like all about the beverages.
Yeah. So we still need to go visit her.
Yes, please.
Yep. And let's see what else is going on. We know that Gone Girl is being made into a movie. That was the book that we were talking about like crazy last summer. Mm-hmm. Amy, did you ever end up reading it?
Oh yeah, I read it in a day, remember?
Right.
During a weekend.
And you hated the ending, right?
I hated the ending, but it was a great book. I sure as heck could not put it down.
I'll see the movie.
Well, do you like Ben Affleck as an actor?
Yeah, as an actor.
He's kind of a mouth breather. Yeah.
Well, he's being cast as the male lead in Gone Girl, which is kind of good. I think that works.
I think that could work.
And the lead actress who is playing the main character is Rosamund Pike. I never heard of her. Don't know.
She's awesome, Amy, right?
I guess. Yeah. So who knows who Rosamund Pike is. And I don't know how she got this gig because it's a big one.
Yeah.
But so the Gone Girl movie is coming out. And Amy, a book you mentioned last week, The Book Thief, is apparently being turned into a movie.
Yeah. You sent me the trailer, which looked a little bit cheesy, I got to say. Mm. I was all up in it until the narrator came on. And then it was like, in a time of sadness, she had her dreams. I don't know. It was super.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Was that the one? And then he comes out of the ice machine with a, he's like a National Geographic photographer, works for Time Life. That
no,
thing?
Ma'am.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Never mind.
It's about World War II.
Oh.
Okay. And continuing with the book topic, mm-hmm. I'm going to do a little spin on the Stephen King news.
Do it.
Okay.
Okay. There's spin so it. Much Stephen King news. I've been updating people since, say, January. Every
yeah, right.
And it's like there's constantly information about Stephen King and mm-hmm. what he's doing and what his projects, what's being turned into movies. Right now we have his one of his latest books, 11/22/63, The One About a Man Who Travels Back in Time mm-hmm. to Try and Prevent JFK's Assassination. Mm-hmm. That has been optioned by J.J. Abrams' company, mm. Bad Robot. Wow. So they're turning that into, I hope, a movie, not a TV show. But mm-hmm. so that's just the latest. And of course, Dr. Sleep is coming out in the fall, and Joyland just came out. And
what are those two?
Dr. Sleep is the sequel to The Shining.
Yeah, it's a scary mm-hmm. name.
Joyland is the sort of a lighter weight novel about a scary story of an amusement park in the summer mm-hmm. of 1973. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King also has his opera that he did with John Cougar Mellencamp.
Right, I remember talking and about that. That's too weird to forget.
T-Bone Burnett. I heard an interview with them on NPR. And it's so sweet. You know, Stephen King and his wife Tabitha have been married forever.
And it's really cute. Mm-hmm.
And they have four kids. And just in this interview with Stephen King, one of the first things he said is that the reason he did this project with John Cougar, this, I don't know, is a comedic opera or dramatic mm-hmm. play opera thing, mm-hmm. is that his wife came across the script and she said, you should do this.
And I sat down with my wife, who is the smartest guy in the room at any time, and I said, what do you think? Because usually when I say that, she says, I don't think you should have anything to do with this. You got too much to do, blah, blah, blah. She said, he's like you. He thinks like you. He talks like you. I think you should do it.
Oh, that made me love him even more.
Yeah. Aww. He should totally be a guest on our podcast. You should ask him.
I actually have a theory.
Okay.
Because recently in the New York Times, they had a big article about his family, about how he has four kids. Three of them are writers. Three of them are very successful writers.
Wow. Mm. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what the article is about. It's like, you know, writing is a family business. They have two writer parents and mm-hmm. they made, you know, three out of four writer mm-hmm. kids. And so what they did is they were such great parents that they had their kids read like the classics onto audio tape when they were younger so that the parents could listen to books on tape while they were driving, read by their children.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so all this information is constantly coming forward about Stephen King. And it's like, this guy has been in the public eye since, what, 1977?
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot. He's 60s, almost 70 yeah. years old. So one would think, one might want to step back from the public spotlight. Mm-hmm. Like, why is there this constant onslaught of information about Stephen King, right?
He's a living legend.
That is true. But I know he seems right? like such a mellow guy. What does he need yeah. to prove it all the time? Like, is his publicist working overtime?
I mean, is he proving it all the time or just doing his
just
job?
Just doing what he loves.
Yeah.
You know? We have a writer.
It's not like you see him all. It's not like he's at every party, like in all the yeah. tabloids. He's just writing books, but he's a huge fan base. And I'm sure a publicist who's capitalizing
really
on
good
it.
Yeah,
well, this is what I think is gonna okay. I think this is gonna happen. We know he has like a charitable heart. He's mm-hmm. given mm-hmm. money to fix the Bangor library. He's given money to heat the homes of the people in Maine who can't afford
oh,
it.
That's nice.
I think what he's going to do is he's going to do something like what Warren Buffett has done, is agree to give away all his money mm-hmm. when he passes on and make like the Stephen King legacy, that he will have a foundation. I think he's prepping the world mm-hmm. to accept the fact that he is going to give all his money away.
I hope he gives some to his children.
I think his children will be
just fine. Yeah.
One's a Unitarian minister mm-hmm. and the other three are successful writers.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, Joe Hill's book, Heart-Shaped Box, is being turned into a movie as well.
Oh, good for him. So, do they not have his same last name?
They're doing fine. No, Joe, they took their middle names mm-hmm. and used it as their last name because they didn't want to write on their dad's right. coattails.
Okay, so what are their names?
Joe Hill, mm-hmm. Owen Hill, Naomi King, she's the minister, and then I don't know the fourth.
Their middle
daughter.
Names are Hill?
Yeah.
Or maybe that's their mom's maiden name or something?
Now, this is where I reach the end of my Stephen King knowledge.
Okay.
So, but anyway, mark mm-hmm. my words, people, I'm calling it out now. Mm-hmm. I'm pr- prognosticating that he's going to be a great philanthropist.
Maybe. I hope so. He seems like a nice man. Well, I don't know.
I totally laid it out there.
Okay, he is. Yerlin's 100% right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking about last names and name changes, I have something to say.
Okay.
All right.
I just want to run it by you and tell me if you think I'm crazy.
All right.
Oh, preach, I can't wait. Sister. I cannot wait. All
okay. Right. I am thinking of changing, you know, I'm thinking of changing my last name, not going back to my maiden name now that my divorce is happening. My married name was Deaver. I had that for 12 years. My maiden name is Metlin, M-E-T-T-L-I-N. It's kind of got like a German, a vague German background. I'm thinking of changing it to Blair. Geraldine Blair.
Why?
Because I feel like if I go back to my maiden name, it's kind of like, I feel like it's taking
me. You can't do Jerry Blair. Wait, you cannot do Jerry Blair. This is really important.
Jerry Blair.
I'm going to tell you why right now. You can't do it.
I'm not Jerry, though. I'm Geraldine.
But I'm going to tell you why you can't do Geraldine Blair. Because of the facts of life. Because of Blair Warner's cousin Jerry, who had MS, right?
Yes.
And she had that voice.
Yeah.
And I'm going to imitate it now, and it's going to be horribly mean.
Oh, God.
But she used to say, but I have a friend who does this, hilarious. But she's okay, won't do it. But she'd say Blair.
No, do it, do it.
She'd say Blair. Yeah. And she would say, I'm not drunk, I have multiple sclerosis, which is horrible. Okay, so nobody yell at me, but this is what she used to say. And anybody of the right age is going to associate Jerry Blair.
They're
going to be like, oh,
Blair.
Jerry, you say Blair. Like Blair, you know? So,
well, Blair don't do it. Warner is why I'm doing it.
Then you can change your first name.
Yeah. No, no, no. Because
how about Warner? How about Geraldine Warner? That's a nice name.
I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me as much. I like Geraldine Blair. However, I did do a Google search. Mm-hmm, there is a Geraldine Blair out there.
Is she a porn star?
No, she's like a 12-year-old girl.
That's kind of cute. Well, I mean, there's always, you know, I'm sure 12. There's more than one Susan Wright out there.
There's so, you guys.
Although only one Amy Forrest, I will say.
If you Googled Susan Wright, there's a Susan Wright that murdered her husband and is famous for that. There is a Susan Wright that is an author and writes self-help books and how to teach your pet tricks books. And then there's me.
And there's you. There's only one of me.
Okay. Well, there's of course there's only one of you.
Of course.
And there's only
it's
one
plenty.
Of you.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's actually an women suffragist.
Oh yeah.
Susan famous Wright? Susan Wright. Yeah.
But why Blair Warner?
I love her.
Okay.
I've always loved her. Uh-huh. My other option is Diana Prince. Wonder Woman's alter ego.
Oh, I like that.
Geraldine Prince.
I don't know.
Yeah,
it doesn't quite
ring.
Just change it to Diana Prince.
Well, I always know
that'd be awesome.
The alliteration of when young actresses would come to Hollywood in the 1940s and they would have to change their names, they would always change to an alliterative name where the first and last start with the same letter, like Marilyn Monroe,
Greta Garbo,
or
others that are too numerous to name here
that we can't
because we can't think of them
exactly.
So anyway, so the so like
Catherine Keener,
Amy Adams,
right.
or Susan Sarandon. It is a nice
but Geraldine Blair is a JB.
I know so I got to think of my back.
Geraldine
Jeepers.
I mean, I've been thinking of
Geraldine Jones,
but
that
then
sounds
no
nice.
Not
Geraldine Justine.
Amy,
I'm in trouble now. I'm sorry. Be quiet.
I would like to think of something
Jackson,
that has
nice.
A personal significance.
Oh right,
okay.
Right.
Like
okay.
My love for Blair Warner.
Right.
I didn't know until just now that you love Blair Warner.
Oh
so
my
much.
God, her corduroy blazers, that hair.
Well, the hair,
the hair,
the nose, that cute little nose.
I know.
God, the hair.
The hair
can
was
I tell
awesome.
You guys a story though?
Yes.
So when I was living in Seattle, I was kind of a part of the goth scene over there. And some of my friends, there's this guy who was a metal worker, and he was a welder. He did welding stuff. And he was dating this girl. They were just so cute together. They were awesome. They owned a house together. And it came time for them to get married. They didn't have just a regular old wedding.
Please tell me they had a Facts of Life wedding. You'll make me so happy.
Goth. Did you hear the goth part?
Yeah, but okay. I'm denial.
Still, okay. So they had a medieval forest wedding where all the guests had to dress in medieval clothing and we went. And I did not know that this was going to happen at the wedding.
Uh-oh.
But they changed their last names at the wedding. And they changed their last names to Skellington.
From
that's
Skellington.
Good.
From the Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Skellington.
That's pretty dorky.
No, I like it.
Yeah. It was really cute.
All right.
It was cute, but very surprising. Like, yeah. Seriously? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, somebody told me, I was talking to a woman at work who's divorced. She said that she changed her name, not the last name, but she changed her middle name because on your final divorce papers, when you're like signing the decree, like I hereby so-and-so, it says, you know, my legal name is, and you can just write in your name. I mean, of course, you have to follow it up with like legal documentation, but she changed her middle name from like Marie, which meant nothing, to O'Connor, which had a personal significance for her. So she and she just wrote it in, and she said, if you do it, then you can save all this money because you don't have to go to a judge. And because so she was basically giving me a tip, and then like the wheel started turning, and I was like, wait a minute, what if I do? What if I did change my name? The only drawback is that I think maybe my kids, you know, like for a family, like the kids and the mom, and having, you know, like my maiden name is my son's middle name, like, so keep it all in the family, you know, that may be one consideration. However, I feel like I was Geralyn Metlin from the time I was 0 years old until the time I was 29. And I feel like I'm not sure I want to go back. I want to go forward.
I could see that.
So, I mean, it's not like a strong conviction. I'm not sure because it is a little... I feel also it's a little bit kooky to be like, just to pick a name out of thin air and be like, this is my new name.
Right.
However, it's like, I can do whatever I want.
You can do whatever you want.
I'm also thinking our pal Amber. I'm thinking of stealing her name.
Marlo?
Yes.
That's a great name.
That's a great name.
Because it's so pretty. And I wouldn't do it because she already has, she's already Amber Marlo. But I think she picked that for herself.
It's a beautiful name. And I actually know someone else who did something like that.
I like the idea. And I'm very curious if there's any listeners who have done, have gone along this path.
A friend of mine who did not have a good childhood.
Yeah.
Changed her name to another friend of mine. She didn't even actually, it was a little bit of a scandal. Another friend of mine's, this is back like right after college, another friend of mine's girlfriend's last name.
Oh, really?
And so this friend number one, name changer, friend number two, my friend number three, girlfriend of friend. So one and three did not know each other very well, but her last name was Wisehart. And so my friend was like, I'm taking it. And she changed her name to Barbara Wisehart. And then my friend number two was like, what the fuck? That was weird. You can't take my girlfriend's last name. She's like, I already did it. So, but yeah, it's a great, name.
I like Lockhart.
Lockhart's nice, but then sounds like you can't come in to my heart. Open heart?
You're locked into my heart.
Oh, well, that sounds... Oh, that's good. See? I thought you meant you locked out, not locked in.
See where you go?
Prison heart.
So, well, let me get a little tribal on you.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Amy's like, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, bring it.
In some Native American cultures, names were changed at any significant point in your life.
Oh, this is significant. So like at their bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, exactly.
The Native American bar mitzvahs. Very important.
Kids would have a name when they were born, and then when they became a woman or a man, they would have another name. And when they maybe got married or something significant in their life happened, they would change their name again.
So there you go, Geralyn. Significant.
Okay. All right. I'm going to keep thinking. I haven't quite locked on.
Okay. I'm going to keep thinking now. That's a good challenge.
But Blair is number one right now.
Geralyn Blair.
So let us announce that we do have a winner for our Crave Duet giveaway.
We do. Yay.
It goes to wonderful Terry.
Yay, Terry.
Yay, Terry.
And I believe this is Terry S.
Okay, Terry S.
I emailed her and messaged, and she's gonna have a thingamajigger sent out to her.
And so, if you are so inclined to call us with a review, we'd love to hear how you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
And what did she want to engrave on her duet?
No More Lonely Nights.
No More Lonely Nights.
There you go.
So, good one.
Now we are going to, I have a little bit of a beauty product update, teeny one. So we'll be back after the music and until... Then, do we have any parting words?
I do. I have some last parting words for Taylor. Taylor, you take the good, you take the bad, take them both. There you have the facts of life. The facts of life, when the world never seems to be living up to your dreams, and suddenly you're finding out the facts of life are all about you. So, coming back, I have just a quick update. Last week, I had talked about this new store, Inglot, that I happened upon on Las Vegas. Well, they're in Macy's. I just I went to the Sherman Oaks Galleria, and smack dab in the middle of Macy's was the Inglot stand. And everything I saw in Las Vegas was there. All the glitter, all the false eyelashes, all the cream-based eyeshadows. I did have a chance to talk to the
woman. She said they're a line from Poland. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, because they're from Poland, everything's less expensive. It's a lower priced line. And so a mascara is mm-hmm. $10.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was pissed because when I was in Las Vegas, I bought a new Dior mascara mm-hmm. that was this bright electric blue,
ooh.
Like super, super bright. And so there it was. And so it was $30, you know.
Okay.
And so, but there at Inglot was the exact same type of mascara, yeah. electric blue mm-hmm. for $10.
Mm. Now you know.
Yeah, now I know. But yeah. I also know where to buy glitter because I did get my glitter.
It's important to know where to buy glitter. Very, very important.
So, and it was like, I think it was like $8 or something. Okay. So can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I don't know how much glitter runs you these. What are you going
to
do with it?
It's actually kind of tricky to apply. I am ending up smearing it like in, you know, I have to figure out how to like distribute it evenly.
Yeah, really. Right? You need to like, it's like putting powdered sugar on the brownies. You need right. to like put it in a strainer and,
yes,
and sprinkle it across
like,
yourself.
Sift it all over myself.
Yeah.
But right now, no, I do basically smear it on my chest mm-hmm. and many people throughout the day ask me, what is that pink blue stuff
oh,
on
so
your...
you wear it to work.
What is that yeah. pink
okay,
blue
okay,
stuff?
I was going to ask you where you're wearing it. Like if it's just at home or...
No, I mean, I don't work in a very conservative workplace.
Yeah.
I work in a studio with artists. So we can dress up or dress down as much as we want and dress as crazy as we like. So I can wear my glitter to work.
Yeah, because you're an artist.
Yes.
Yes. And I feel like, you know, some people think only strippers wear glitter.
Mm-hmm. Not true.
I don't care.
Not true.
I do not care. It's like when you get to be as old as we are, you don't give a fuck.
You don't.
No, you really don't.
You really don't. I work in a very conservative workplace, so I do not think I could wear glitter, but I kind of want to.
Well, no, but there's different kinds. There's like shimmer. Like,
is there like the classy finance glitter? Because that's what I need.
The well, corporate, it's gold.
Corporate glitter, yeah.
And I mean, gold and silver.
Also what I have is like a little pot of like bronze mm-hmm. shimmer. Mm-hmm. So you would not call mm-hmm. it glitter. It's more shimmer. So it's like, so to look like you had a shiny day at the beach.
Where do you put that?
You could dust it on your forearms or your collarbone.
Maybe.
Your sternum, your cheekbones, just give yourself a little bit of mm-hmm. shine.
I kind
of
shimmer, want to
do it. Shimmer, shimmer.
All right.
So, yeah, you don't have to go full on like sparkly. Mine is like white and pink and bluish mm-hmm. opalescence.
All right. Glitter. I'll have to go to Macy's. And next time we meet for a movie, we'll go to Macy's. We'll check it out.
Absolutely. So now I guess that does wrap it up for this week, unless you guys have anything else to share.
Mm-mm.
Not that I can think of.
Me neither.
I have been using a moisturizer okay. called Derm Organics. Uh-huh. So it's like Derm Organics. And I really, really, really super like it. It's just a facial moisturizer. You can get it on Amazon. You can't get it at Sephora, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it's really, really great.
I have a, so there you this go. Isn't a beauty product, but it's just as uninteresting to people who don't want to listen to the beauty products thing. Mm-hmm. I am really enjoying those glass canisters in my pantry because I had to get them because of the pantry moths.
Oh, right.
So I had to get some fancy glass canisters. Boy, uh-huh. is my pantry attractive.
Yeah.
Looks like something out of Real Simple magazine
nice.
Right now. So
and
beautiful.
They have like the little seal.
They have the seal, my cereal's in it, my mm. pasta's in it. It looks so nice.
Your pasta?
My pasta. All right. Now I'm done.
So remember, we can be reached at our voicemail at 818-643-1565. You can write us an email at thebecauseshow@gmail.com. We are part of the Bald Move Network, where you can find other great shows like Up Yours Downstairs, mm-hmm. the podcast that podcasts on all sorts of Victorian goodery, mm-hmm. and the Personal Arrogance duo outside of Seattle. I think they're near Bellingham. That's where you are from, right?
Yeah, so Bellingham.
I think they're always
Bellingham,
talking about
I love
Bellingham.
Seattle. Mm-hmm.
Fort Hood? Does Fort Hood sound from? No.
Yeah, Fort Hood.
Okay. And of course, Aaron and Jim, who are doing their podcast on Breaking Good and all sorts of great stuff throughout the year. So until then, everyone stick that pineapple in your cart upside down.
Upside down. See what happens.